205 DGS on KMOX. If you are listening on 1120 AM, you can do better than that. My mom is in a facility in Clayton, and I brought her boombox in so she could listen to KMOX because she listens to it 24 hours a day, literally, always has. And I have it set on 98.7 FM, pulled little antenna up, sounds great. So many people stream us, so many people listen on the Odyssey app. Go to odyssey.com. You can download the podcasts anywhere where you get your podcasts. We get millions and millions of downloads per year. Maybe the biggest podcast listenership in the city and beyond. I mean, we do really, really well with that. So thanks to all of our podcasters out there. Okay, so the biggest political hot potato right now is, of course, what's going on in Gaza and Israel and here back at home in Columbia and Austin. Wheels has a take on this and some audio to go with it. Wheels, take it away.
Yeah, so we really haven't gotten into this too much in the last week when this has become such a big deal on campuses, right? It's Columbia, NYU, I think USC, UTSA is the one you're referring to down in Texas. And somebody went out, and there's a bigger point than what you're going to get from the audio, but a reporter went out and went to, I think it was at NYU, and asked one of the young college students, a young woman, what were they trying to accomplish? What was NYU doing wrong? You know, what's the point of the protest that they're having?
What do you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
So there's two young women there, and I think the problem that is difficult, and we're not handling the story in the correct ways, not us, but like nationwide. I think a lot of these young people mean very well, but that's an illustration. They're like, what are you actually protesting? Like, what do you want NYU to do about a problem that has existed in the Middle East for a really long time that has had world leaders working on it for decades? What do you think your school is going to do about this? What are you trying to accomplish? And I've had this kind of point when it comes to blocking bridges or blocking O'Hare Airport. There is a point to be made if you're of their belief. There's nothing wrong with having your beliefs on the world and expressing them and getting your voice heard. But are you doing the things that will actually affect change, or are you just doing things that make you feel better? And I think that's a question that a lot of people are asking the college students, which is why this reporter was like, what do you want NYU to do? NYU is a university. They're not going to impact international policy. Is there something specific that they're doing that you think is harmful? And the people asked are like, well, I don't know. And if you don't know, then what are you doing? And I want two things. I would like for people to understand that sometimes young people are doing things out of emotion and with good intentions. They're not trying to be stupid. They're not trying. They're just young, and they're trying to feel like they want to do something that will help a major world problem. But the reality is there's not much that you can do. But if you are going to do something, what's the most effective way of changing policy? Is it staying on your campus and putting tents out on the lawn? Or is it going to where decision makers are? Is it going to your local congressman's office and protesting and asking to be seen? Is it going to Washington, D.C. and parking yourself in front of Congress for a couple of days? And I'm not trying to be critical of people that think they're doing something good. Now, you can disagree on the policies. I'm not bringing up the policies because there is clearly no agreement on that. We can agree that what's happening to human beings is terrible.
Let me play devil's advocate. I agree with everything you're saying, but if I were running this and someone said, okay, we need to make a big impact, do we go to the White House, or do we do it here at USC or at Austin, Texas? I would say do it in Austin, Texas. Because people are at the White House every single day. I was at the White House a couple months ago, and you couldn't even see the White House for all the people protesting, you know, high prices of bologna, doesn't matter. People are there all the time. But this was wall to wall. like at USC last night, NYU, and they're just it's live, and they're just waiting for someone to jump, waiting for someone to get froggy, and they're gonna beat these kids down. So I think it's having a bigger effect. I agree with you that you should know what the hell you're protesting if you're going to protest, but I think back to when I was, so I was very religious, believe it or not, when I was a late teenager and in my early 20s, and it's about the time that the Passion of the Christ movie came out. No, not the Passion of the Christ. Which one am I thinking of? With Willem Dafoe.
I think that's what it was.
No, the Passion of the Christ was with Jim Caviezel.
Oh, right.
Oh, come on.
I'm not sure.
The Last Temptation of Christ.
There you go.
And I belonged to this, little church, and they brought out a petition and said, we want everyone to sign this because this is a bastardization of Jesus and it should never be shown. And we're going to take this to the local theater. And I signed it just full of anger and, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I had no idea what I was talking about. Later on, I saw the film, and I'm like, well, that's a whole bunch of nothing. And so I have been that young person who was just full of passion, but no knowledge. Now, some people who protested The Last Temptation of Christ knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew exactly why they were doing it. Some people who protested Michael Brown knew exactly why they were in Ferguson and exactly why they were mad. Some people at USC last night knew precisely what they wanted done by USC or by the United States government, but most of them don't. Most of them are there because their friends are there, or there's a crowd, or, my theory that in modern times, most people are cosplaying. On the right, they're cosplaying that they're a founding father. And people on the left are cosplaying that they're in Selma, Alabama. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't important things to do on the right. Doesn't mean that there aren't important things to do for civil rights on the left. But you aren't walking with Dr. King, and you're not throwing tea off the side of a ship, but I think a lot of people think they are.
Right. Well, that's kind of my point, right? Because when you use the comparable that most of us can reference because we've seen not only the news stories of it, but read about it in history and have seen movies about the civil rights movement. It wasn't just people protesting on campuses. That was a part of what was going on. But it was also people marching in the places that needed to change. They were in Selma, Alabama for a reason, right? It was people that were taking risks, that were going to the places that needed to be changed, that helped make the change. And there's nothing wrong with showing support. There's nothing wrong. But when you're asking administrations to do something about an international problem that they have no impact over, I don't understand where that's going to get you, but I also want to give grace to college kids because they're college kids.
Figuring it out.
They are right. They may have great intentions and not know all of the details. And I think that's the point. Yet we have two dynamics. We have one, which is older generation saying, stupid kids, you don't know what you're doing. Well, you were stupid when you were a kid too. Like all of us were. When you're 19, 18, 19, 20, you don't fully understand how things are going. So show grace for those kids rather than just smashing them as idiots, because they're not all idiots. Some of them might be, right? Some of them are not. Some of them may end up down the road realizing, I was not right about that thing. Others will never think that. They will think they were on the right side forever. You're going to change as you get older, or at least a lot of people will.
What do you guys think about the issue of people being mad at the administration, people being mad at Biden for not doing enough? The way I look at it, realistically, Biden is doing about as much as he realistically can. He is pushing back on Netanyahu. He's saying enough is enough. The way that you have waged this war is not appropriate. I understand why people are mad at you. You need to dial it down. You need to be more surgical.
Right.
The next step would be, we're not going to send you any money, and we're not going to send you any munitions. We're not going to send you any planes. We're not going to send you the weapons of war. But for an American president to do that would be so galactically huge. So I'm a supporter of Israel. Mm-hmm. I'm a detractor of Hamas, and I am a sympathizer with the Palestinian people who have just been decimated.
Well, they've been victimized.
And I think you can hold all those thoughts in your mind at once.
Those human beings have been victimized by everybody. They've been victimized by Hamas, who hasn't allowed an election in 17 years. Why do you think that is? Because they don't want to lose control. And they've made people comply at gunpoint. So they've been victimized on that and obviously victimized by being bombed. They are not the ones that did everything wrong. Like the kids, the moms that are protecting their kids, they're not the problem. They're victims across the board. And I think we can all agree on that. What I think is difficult to do when you're zooming out, and this is why when I say we talk about the kids, when you give the young people grace, you do need to help people understand how the world works. You can't just dump allies, because then when you need allies, they will dump you, right? You have to show all of your allies, and you sign agreements with different countries. You have people that are your allies for reasons, because when something goes wrong, when 9/11 happens and we're going to go do this, we needed ally support for what we decided to do. It's the way of the world.
We wouldn't be a country without
France. You have the other side. Exactly right. We make that joke about World War II, right? They'd all be speaking German. Yeah, well, we'd still be a British colony if Ben Franklin and other great Americans hadn't gone to France and solicited their support to help us defeat what was the most powerful military in the world at the time. So you need alliances, and they need to be two-way streets. But then you also have to consider your end of the question, Dave. What's the alternative? This is where young people need to learn to be more realistic and be guided by idealism, but understand the world. So you don't like what the Biden administration is going to do. Okay, totally understand. You're allowed to have those opinions. Is the alternative going to be better from your worldview? If you're going to say, I can't vote for this guy, do you think the alternative, a Trump administration, because the RFK administration is not an actual alternative, it's not going to happen mathematically, is that going to be better for you or not? And I don't just mean on this issue. I talk about across the board, and that's where you're trying to make sure that people are saying, this is where I get to the point where it's all about emotion when you're younger. You get mad, you get fired up, you get excited, you get sad, and that's what drives your momentary thinking. As you get older, you start to regulate those things, and you start to see the bigger picture. And I think that's the part where it's got to be more of a, hey, let's talk and help each other, as opposed to tell the kids they're idiots.
I think what you just said says a lot, and it's the complications. You don't understand complications when you're young. Everything is so, at least speaking for myself, everything's so black and white. And everything is also, like I've always said, I thought my mom and dad were the two dumbest people. I thought they'd been kicked in the head by a mule at the same time. And it's just like, how can you think the things you think? You're so very, very wrong. And I'm so exactly spot on right. And then as the years roll by, it's a cliche, but you start to think, oh, well, I certainly wasn't completely right. And they certainly weren't completely wrong. But you can't age yourself artificially, just like you can't take a 6-foot sapling and make it a 100-foot tree. You can't take a 19-year-old kid, as smart as and savvy as they may be at 19, and suddenly make them 57. You just can't.
Right. So what the solution isn't for the younger people, it's not stomp your feet, make a lot of noise on a college campus. It's explain, how do you actually get things done?
That would do so much good.
Right. And from our end, even if you disagree with someone, it's okay to understand where they are, who they are, and how they are, and not just lump them into a group of idiots.
I also don't think it's ever okay to scare people. I mean, I understand civil disobedience, it's been very, very successful over the decades, but I don't think it's okay to scare people.
No, and that's a part of what's gone on, too, is there has been targeting of the Jewish populations on some of these campuses with threats or insults, and that's just not okay. That can't be accepted, because you couldn't accept it and wouldn't for any other individual group of people.
So, Andrew, what aspect of the cicadas are you afraid of?
Okay, so Kevin was telling me When you weren't here recently, Kevin was telling me about these cicadas that are coming up.
Zombie cicadas.
They're zombie cicadas. So they are under the ground with the other cicadas, mm-hmm. but they have been eaten and replaced by this fungus that controls them.
Takes over their bodies, yeah.
Damn. And then causes them to spread. And I was like, that doesn't scare me. I'd rather have a zombie fungus cicada. I'm less scared of mushrooms than I am of regular cicadas because I'm terrified of regular cicadas. I'm going to have a long summer. And then I saw a picture of them, and they're just like, they have no butt, like their butt part, the thorax or whatever you call it, is just like a big white clump of mushroom.
Okay.
And other than that, they just look
but
normal.
They have the head and wings of
they
a cicada?
They have the head and wings and the legs.
Duh.
And they can fly, like the fungus controls their brain, so they fly and they go do all their cicada things and everything. But it's just they're being controlled by this fungus in their butt.
Do we know what the fungus wants from them? Like what the fungus makes them do?
Yeah, it makes them reproduce. It makes them like send out mating signals so that other cicadas come and then they
easy.
They do their thing and that infects the other cicada. And then eventually in that process,
so they're still cicadas.
No, they're shells. They're taken over by this fungus.
So the fungus is reproducing.
The fungus makes the body imitate the mating signals so that other cicadas come for mating. And then
get infected by the fungus.
Then they get infected by the fungus. And then the fungus one somehow, their body falls out. And then the fungus just falls back to the ground where more cicadas are going to get it later.
It's very efficient.
And they
right?
And they look scary.
I want to be a boyfriend.
Stay by me. No, not at all. 236 DGS on KMOX. Our buddy Chet Pleben joins us to discuss a few legal matters. Hello, Chet.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Good. So David Pecker on the stand for, I guess, a second day in a row, maybe even a third day in a row. How's it going? What are we learning?
It's pretty clear that he is a key witness. You know, usually good prosecutors will lead with their strongest and best witness. And based upon some of the testimony that Pecker has given over the last several days, he clearly is their strongest witness. It came out today that he had a cooperative agreement with the prosecutor's office dating back to 2019. So he was providing information to the prosecutor about Donald Trump since 2019. And today, some of the significant testimony that he had today was that he puts himself into direct contact with Donald Trump with respect to discussions regarding Karen McDougal and regarding Stormy Daniels. Specifically, Karen McDougal was going to do, or did rather, an interview with CNN about her relationship with Donald Trump. So now this is now breaking open. And you recall that Pecker and the National Enquirer, which is that grocery store tabloid, paid McDougal $150,000 to keep quiet. So about that time, also Stormy Daniels was coming along, and she was making noise about going public and speaking publicly. So Pecker receives a telephone call, according to his testimony, from Donald Trump indicating that that's not to be, that there's an agreement, that they need to be silenced, that there's an understanding, and that if they're not silenced, you know, either Stormy Daniels and or McDougal are going to owe him, you know, $1 million or whatever the crazy number might be. So clearly what's happening here is, you remember previously Pecker testified that he was invited over to Donald Trump's apartment to discuss how the National Enquirer could help them during the start of Trump's presidential campaign. And that's when the catch and kill concept was developed. Catch and kill means that you have a derogatory story like Stormy Daniels or like Karen McDougal. And so you pay those people to keep quiet, keep silent. And so therefore you kill the story. And clearly the testimony of Pecker for the last couple of days has without a doubt established that and established his long-standing, long-term relationship with Donald Trump. Now, interestingly, you know, Donald Trump criticizes Michael Cohen publicly and whatnot, and the gag order violations and all that sort of stuff, but he's not criticizing David Pecker, which calls him a good guy. Well, now the cross-examination is beginning, and I'm just wondering why in the world he's doing that, unless maybe when the cross begins by his lawyers, maybe there's something that they know about mm-hmm. that Pecker's going to talk about that's ultimately going to help Trump, because it's out of character for Trump to be talking about a witness as adverse as yeah. Pecker, you know, in the affirmative and saying nice things about him. So
my guess, Chet, I think the smart thing to do would be to try to normalize it, to try to say, now, Mr. Pecker, isn't it true that Donald Trump is not the only friend you've done this for? You've done this for dozens, maybe hundreds of people. Catch and kill happens all the time with lots of publications. Nothing to see here. I mean, that's the approach I would try to take.
Yeah, but I think the prosecutor a couple days ago established that, according to Pecker, he never did this with any other entity, and this is the only time that he did it with Donald Trump. These three instances, the doorman, McDougal, and Stormy Daniels. And remember, his publication paid McDougal $150,000, paid the doorman $30,000, and he was never repaid by Trump. And that's why Michael Cohen had to go ahead and write the check to Stormy Daniels, because Pecker said, my publication isn't going to be doing this because you owe us $180,000 already and you haven't repaid it. So clearly what the significance of this is that Pecker drags Trump into the middle of this, drags Trump with, knowing conversationally that he knew about the non-disclosure agreements. He knew about Stormy Daniels. He knew about Karen McDougal. It wasn't something that he would say, I have no idea. I have no idea what any of this
Chet,
is about.
I have a question that's actually about this case, and then it's just a larger legal question. Let's say that Donald Trump does testify. I can't imagine in a million years that he would, but let's say that he does. And he denies all this stuff. He would be, anyone who testifies under oath is open to perjury charges. But how do you prove that someone is lying? Let's say, you know, who would do that? Because if this jury believes Stormy Daniels and believes Karen McDougal and believes David Pecker, they wouldn't be the ones to say that he had perjured himself, correct?
Right. It would have to be independent evidence to establish the elements of perjury. So they would have to, I mean, that's a whole separate can of worms. And so if they convict him on this, and remember, he's got three other criminal cases pending, you know, I doubt that they would be messing around with a perjury charge. That very, very rarely happens, frankly, in criminal cases. And witnesses lie all the time in criminal cases,
yeah.
But very, very rarely are they prosecuted. But one other thing before we leave, and that is the Supreme Court
yes.
Argument today. I always suspected that the reason that the Supreme Court granted cert on this, took the case, was in order to kill any federal criminal prosecution that was lacking before the election. And I think my theory came true today, given at least some of the commentary, a lot of it coming from Roberts, talking about, well, you know, it's easy to get an indictment and should we send this case back to the D.C. Court of Appeals? So, you know, if they send it back to the Court of Appeals, that will guarantee that no way it will Trump be prosecuted before the election. So my suspicions, I mean, this is just absolutely unbelievable. Listen to what Alito says. At one point, he's arguing that permitting Trump to be prosecuted for attempting to overthrow that 2020 presidential election would lead us into a cycle that destabilizes our democracy because, listen to this, future presidents would lose elections, who lose elections, would mimic Trump's criminal behavior in order to remain in office and avoid being prosecuted by their successor. You got to be kidding. You can't be serious that would be a reason that you would grant criminal immunity both during the presidency and afterwards. So it's clear to me that what they're attempting to do here is go ahead and move this case backward so that he never is prosecuted prior to the time of that election. Now, I doubt seriously that they would ever, ever vote to give blanket criminal immunity to a president, both while he's in office and afterwards. That would be just kind of a
Chet, if they do that, if they kick it back down, does that mean that there's no finding by the Supreme Court, so we still don't know whether a president has full immunity or not?
No, there would be some sort of finding by the Supreme Court in terms of, well, you know, and Roberts was talking about, it's so easy to get a president indicted or anybody indicted, you take him to the grand jury. Well, yeah, of course it is. I mean, I don't know where Roberts was when I was defending criminal cases and my clients were being indicted because they're indicting ham sandwiches. You know, yes, that's always been the case. So clearly they would render some kind of an opinion and then they would send that back to the lower court in order maybe to look at another issue potentially or implement something that they were talking about. And it may very well be that there may be a different checks and balances on a grand jury process if you're going to indict the president of the United States. And I'm assuming that Alito's commentary was consistent with what Roberts was talking about and how easy it is to get a grand jury indictment. Yeah, well, of course it's easy to get a grand jury indictment because it's just a prosecutor in there with a grand jury. So I, you know, it's just disappointing that this court all the way around, you know, from Alito to Roberts to Clarence Thomas, you know, and all of what we've seen for the last year plus, you know, gifts and buying cars and buying houses for these folks, you know, wow. I mean, and that's the highest court that we have. That's the highest court. That's it, Dave. We can't go any higher than these folks. And they have lifetime appointments. Pretty sad state of affairs.
Chet, so, we'll plan on talking to you tomorrow. Thank you, my friend.
You bet.
All you rock and roll fans out there, top of the hour, Wheeler's going to take over the show, and he's going to interview guitar god Steve Vai. Chocolate is being wiped out by its own COVID-like pandemic.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's wiping it out.
Really?
It's
Choco-19.
It's called Cacao Swollen Shoot Virus.
That sounds awful.
Sounds like something Ranji would have in one of his videos.
Yeah.
Right? And guess how it's being cured? A vaccine.
Oh.
Chocolate's got its own vaccine.
Well,
chocolate making
sounds like a lot of people are going to stop eating chocolate.
Yeah, suddenly people aren't so anti-vax, right? Mm.
Chocolate's got an appointment at Walgreens. It's got to go in. Wait in a little chair.
Is it on the list of the very few things that if it went away, it would ruin people?
Chocolate?
It wouldn't ruin me. I'd survive without it, but I know there are people that would.
Well, of course it wouldn't ruin Kevin Wheeler.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
It would never disturb Kevin.
Chocolate's not going to take you down.
No, but if you were to, like, eliminate, like, cherry pie, it might crush me.
I didn't know you're such a cherry pie man.
Yeah.
I like how he, before we even got a chance, he was like, is that the thing that would, like, really ruin people? Not me, obviously. Never me.
Well, no, that would, like, be diet dude, cherry pie, and pizza. Then I'd be ruined.
So, not family, obviously. Not human beings. What's the biggest loss you could have? Like video games, you're taken away.
Yep.
Baseball.
That's it?
Is it? What about baseball?
Of those things. Well, I mean, yes. That's
if baseball just ceased to exist, I think that would ruin you.
Baseball is part of my family, so I crafted an exemption for it.
But if baseball just disappeared,
I would be dead.
Yeah. It would ruin your whole life.
Yes.
And I saw the video, I saw part of it, of Alec Baldwin being accosted. Yeah. In like a QT or something. Did it actually make you feel bad for him?
Not so much bad. I think it's unfair to portray that Alec Baldwin did this on purpose, which is what this woman who's like sort of a street performer essentially is doing. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Alec, can you please stay free Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec?
Sorry.
No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time.
Oh, I hate
and I'll leave
like
you alone.
This.
Mm-hmm. I'll leave you alone, I swear.
But
just say free Palestine one time. One time.
Punches the camera.
One time. One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a criminal. Come on, Alec, just say free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine.
Ooh, I prefer him
Israel
to her.
Zionism. Please say it. One time.
Could you do me one quick favor?
Do me a favor, and he smacks the phone.
Good.
Well, as he's saying, though, like, the employee is following her around, and the employee is like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Could you please step out of the building? Oh, I'm so sorry. Could you please leave the building?
Yeah.
And oh, then, so they were apologizing to her.
Yeah, they were apologizing to her, like, I'm so sorry, but we need you to
I'm so sorry we have this murderer here.
Yeah, and he's like, why are you just letting her harass me? Get her out of here. Like, why are you just, you hear him say, like, yeah, call the police. You're just going to let her harass me like this?
I feel like.
Stand by me. No, not at all.
236 DGS on KMOX. Our buddy Chet Pleben joins us to discuss a few legal matters. Hello, Chet.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Good. So David Pecker on the stand for, I guess, a second day in a row, maybe even a third day in a row. How's it going? What are we learning?
It's pretty clear that he is a key witness. You know, usually good prosecutors will lead with their strongest and best witness. And based upon some of the testimony that Pecker has given over the last several days, he clearly is their strongest witness. It came out today that he had a cooperative agreement with the prosecutor's office dating back to 2019. So he was providing information to the prosecutor about Donald Trump since 2019. And today, some of the significant testimony that he had today was that he puts himself into direct contact with Donald Trump with respect to discussions regarding Karen McDougal and regarding Stormy Daniels. Specifically, Karen McDougal was going to do, or did rather, an interview with CNN about her relationship with Donald Trump. So now this is now breaking open. And you recall that Pecker and the National Enquirer, which is that grocery store tabloid, paid McDougal $150,000 to keep quiet. So about that time, also, Stormy Daniels was coming along, and she was making noise about going public and speaking publicly. So Pecker receives a telephone call, according to his testimony, from Donald Trump indicating that that's not to be, that there's an agreement that they need to be silenced, that there's an understanding, and that if they're not silenced, you know, either Stormy Daniels and or McDougal are going to owe him, you know, $1 million or whatever the crazy number might be. So clearly what's happening here is, you remember previously Pecker testified that he was invited over to Donald Trump's department to discuss how the National Enquirer could help them during the start of Trump's presidential campaign. And that's when the catch and kill concept was developed. Catch and kill means that you have a derogatory story like Stormy Daniels or like Karen McDougal, and so you pay those people to keep quiet, keep silent, and so therefore you kill the story. And clearly the testimony of Pecker for the last couple of days has without a doubt established his long-standing, long-term relationship with Donald Trump. Now, interestingly,
you know, Donald Trump criticizes Michael Cohen publicly and whatnot, and the gag order violations and all that sort of stuff. But he's not criticizing David Pecker, which calls him a good guy. Well, now the cross-examination is beginning, and I'm just wondering why in the world he's doing that, unless maybe when the cross begins by his lawyers, maybe there's something that they know about that Pecker's going to talk about that's ultimately going to help Trump. Because it's out of character for Trump to be talking about a witness as adverse as Pecker, you know, in the affirmative and saying nice things about him. So
my guess, Chet, I think the smart thing to do would be to try to normalize it, to try to say, now, Mr. Pecker, isn't it true that Donald Trump is not the only friend you've done this for? You've done this for dozens, maybe hundreds of people. Catch and kill happens all the time with lots of publications. Nothing to see here. I mean, that's the approach I would try to take.
Yeah, but I think the prosecutor a couple days ago established that, according to Pecker, he never did this with any other entity, and this is the only time that he did it with Donald Trump. These three instances, the doorman, McDougal, and Stormy Daniels. And remember, his publication paid McDougal $150,000, paid the doorman $30,000, and he was never repaid by Trump. And that's why Michael Cohen had to go ahead and write the check to Stormy Daniels, because Pecker said, my publication isn't going to be doing this because you owe us $180,000 already and you haven't repaid it. So clearly what the significance of this is that Pecker drags Trump into the middle of this, drags Trump with, knowing conversationally that he knew about the non-disclosure agreements. He knew about Stormy Daniels. He knew about Karen McDougal. It wasn't something that he would say, I have no idea. I have no idea what any of this
Chet,
is about.
I have a question that's actually about this case, and then it's just a larger legal question. Let's say that Donald Trump does testify. I can't imagine in a million years that he would, but let's say that he does, and he denies all this stuff. He would be, anyone who testifies under oath is open to perjury charges. But how do you prove that someone is lying? Let's say, you know, who would do that? Because if this jury believes Stormy Daniels and believes Karen McDougal and believes David Pecker, they wouldn't be the ones to say that he had perjured himself, correct?
Right. It would have to be independent evidence to establish the elements of perjury. So they would have to, I mean, that's a whole separate can of worms. And so if they convict him on this, and remember, he's got three other criminal cases pending, you know, I doubt that they would be messing around with a perjury charge. That very, very rarely happens, frankly, in criminal cases. And witnesses lie all the time in criminal cases, but very, very rarely are they prosecuted. But one other thing before we leave, and that is the Supreme Court argument today. I always suspected that the reason that the Supreme Court granted cert on this, took the case, was in order to kill any federal criminal prosecution that was lacking before the election. And I think my theory came true today, given at least some of the commentary, a lot of it coming from Roberts, talking about, well, you know, it's easy to get an indictment, and should we send this case back to the D.C. Court of Appeals? So, you know, if they send it back to the Court of Appeals, that will guarantee that no way it will Trump be prosecuted before the election. So my suspicions, I mean, this is just absolutely unbelievable. Listen to what Alito says. At one point, he's arguing that permitting Trump to be prosecuted for attempting to overthrow that 2020 presidential election would lead us into a cycle that destabilizes our democracy because, listen to this, future presidents who lose elections would mimic Trump's criminal behavior in order to remain in office and avoid being prosecuted by their successor. You've got to be kidding. You can't be serious that would be a reason that you would grant criminal immunity, both during the presidency and afterwards. So it's clear to me that what they're attempting to do here is go ahead and move this case backward so that he never is prosecuted prior to the time of that election. Now, I doubt seriously that they would ever, ever vote to give blanket criminal immunity to a president, both while he's in office and afterwards. That would be just kind of a
Chet, if they do that, if they kick it back down, does that mean that there's no finding by the Supreme Court, so we still don't know whether a president has full immunity or not?
No, there would be some sort of finding by the Supreme Court in terms of, well, you know, and Roberts was talking about, it's so easy to get a president indicted or anybody indicted, you take him to the grand jury. Well, yeah, of course it is. I mean, I don't know where Roberts was when I was defending criminal cases and my clients were being indicted because they're indicting ham sandwiches. You know, yes, that's always been the case. So clearly they would render some kind of an opinion and then they would send that back to the lower court in order maybe to look at another issue potentially, mm-hmm. or implement something that they were talking about. And it may very well be that there may be a different checks and balances on a grand jury process if you're going to indict the president of the United States. And I'm assuming that Alito's commentary was consistent with what Roberts was talking about and how easy it is to get a grand jury indictment. Yeah, well, of course it's easy to get a grand jury indictment because it's just a prosecutor in there with a grand jury. So it's just disappointing that this court all the way around, from Alito to Roberts to Clarence Thomas, you know, and all of what we've seen for the last year plus, you know, gifts and buying cars and buying houses for these folks, you know, wow. I mean, and that's the highest court that we have. That's the highest court. That's it, Dave. We can't go any higher than these folks. And they have lifetime appointments. Pretty sad. Pretty sad state of affairs.
Chet, so, we'll plan on talking to you tomorrow. Thank you, my friend.
You bet.
All you rock and roll fans out there, top of the hour, Wheeler's going to take over the show, and he's going to interview guitar god Steve Vai. Chocolate is being wiped out by its own COVID-like pandemic.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's wiping it out.
Really?
It's
COVID-19.
It's called cacao swollen shoot virus.
That sounds awful.
Sounds like something Ranji would have in one of his videos.
Yeah.
Right? And guess how it's being cured? A vaccine.
Oh.
Chocolate's got its own vaccine.
Well,
chocolate making
sounds like a lot of people are going to stop eating chocolate.
Yeah, suddenly people aren't so anti-vax, right? Mm.
Chocolate's got an appointment at Walgreens. It's got to go in. Wait in a little chair.
Is it on the list of the very few things that if it went away, it would ruin people?
Chocolate?
It wouldn't ruin me. I'd survive without it, but I know there are people that would.
Well, of course it wouldn't ruin Kevin Wheeler.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
It would never disturb Kevin.
Chocolate's not going to take you down.
No, but if you were to, like, eliminate, like, cherry pie, it might crush me.
I didn't know you're such a cherry pie man.
Yeah.
I like how before we even got a chance, he was like, is that the thing that would, like, really ruin people? Not me, obviously. Never me.
Well, no, that would, like, be diet dude, cherry pie, and pizza. Then I'd be ruined.
So, not family, obviously. Not human beings. What's the biggest loss you could have? Like, video games are taken away.
Yep.
Baseball.
That's it?
Is it? What about baseball?
All those things. Well, I mean, yes. That's
if baseball just ceased to exist, I think that would ruin you.
Baseball is part of my family, so I crafted an exemption for it.
But if baseball just disappeared,
I would be dead.
Yeah. It would ruin your whole life.
Yes.
And I saw the video, I saw part of it, of Alec Baldwin being accosted in like a QT or something. Did it actually make you feel bad for him?
Not so much bad. I think it's unfair to portray that Alec Baldwin did this on purpose, which is what this woman who's like sort of a street performer essentially is doing. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Alec, can you please say Free Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time.
Oh, I hate
and I'll leave
like
you alone.
This.
Mm-hmm. I'll leave you alone. I swear.
But
just say free Palestine one time. One time.
Punches the camera.
One time. One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a criminal. Come on, Alec. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. Just one time. Please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine.
No, I prefer him
Israel
to her.
Zionism. Please say it. One time.
Could you do me one quick favor?
Do me a favor, and he smacks the phone.
Good.
Well, as he's saying, though, like, the employee is following her around, and the employee is like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Could you please step out of the building? Oh, I'm so sorry. Could you please leave the building?
Yeah.
Oh, so they were apologizing to her.
Yeah, they were apologizing to her, like, I'm so sorry, but we need you to
so sorry we have this murderer here.
Yeah, and he's like, why are you just letting her harass me? Get her out of here. Like, why are you just, you hear him say, like, call the police. You're just going to let her harass me like this?
I feel like if she was only heckling him about the things that he did, I don't feel bad for him. But as soon as you're just turning it into your own thing.
Well, and I do think
whatever it is, it's like, okay, now you're just glomming on.
I think it's unfair. It's unfair to say, why did you kill that lady? Because that implies
yeah,
the obvious
that,
implication
right.
is I intentionally killed
it shows her ignorance.
Elena Hutchins.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, anything she has to say after that I don't listen to because
yes.
she's obviously ignorant.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's trying to shock value, and I think having the camera punch is the least she's there is it furthered from there. He was like I think he shoved her out onto the street or something. Like I think he forced her out of the building because
how much time
like,
we have here?
Video. About 30 seconds.
Remember the old Gateway pundit?
Yes,
did you
I
see
do.
That he went
I
bankrupt?
Did. He is.
Yep.
And these are the
because of lawsuits.
Because of lawsuits.
Right.
And I think specifically it was the mother and daughter in Georgia. Is
there's
that right?
That, and I think there's also Dominion.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oof.
You went woke, you went broke. Over which I never could.